You know, I'm sick and tired of people who don't work as hard as I do. They're not contributing as much to the company, but they're getting recognition, bonuses. Sometimes they're getting promoted because they're speaking.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Fred E. Miller. Apparently, the E stands for excellent. Here's three facts I think you should know about Fred, other than being excellent. One, he is a speaker, an international coach, an author with two books selling internationally, getting rave reviews. Those books are No Sweat Public Speaking and No Sweat Elevator Speech. Second fact about Fred, as of July the 8th, 2021... His No Sweat Public Speaking podcast is ranked number 6 on feedspot.com. And number 3, third fact is, as of July 7th, the day before 2021, his No Sweat Public Speaking blog and website is ranked number 6 on feedspot.com. Fred E. Miller, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Well, thanks for having me, George. You can see I'm in the elevator working on my intended message, the elevator speech, the second book. Thank you for that plug.
Fred, since you're in the elevator, you mentioned the elevator speech. Let's just address that initially. The elevator speech, is that important for people? Is it important for everyone or just for salespeople?
Oh, I think for everyone, because people meet at different events, social functions, seminars, standing in front of a line to get into a movie. And somebody says, hey, I'm Bobby. I work over at Home Depot. What do you do? And you got to be able to answer that little infomercial. It's really important. And you want to make it succinct. It has to be concise, consistent, and consistent. Well, I said that already. Concise and consistent. So people know exactly who you are, because people might want to hire you and they might want to refer you. And too many people go on and on with their elevator speech and name all kinds of things. And it gets to the point you're thinking, well, I guess I'll rotate my tires, change my oil, wash my windows. You have to have a bullseye for that elevator speech. Does that make sense to you, George?
It makes sense. And I'm reminded of people who, when they introduce themselves, they say, oh, and I also do this and I also do that. And I have an Etsy store and I volunteer here and I'm thinking of writing this. And oh, what else would you like to know about me?
Exactly. That's what a lot of people do. You're right. And less is more. I think especially in this age where we've got Twitter and we're on Zoom, people want things now. They don't want to wait for it. Give me the, get right to the point right now. So my Twitter type elevator speech is, I speak, coach, and write about networking, public speaking, and presentation skills. Now I've got an 8-floor template and you can skip things. Let me give you another one, because this is, I'm always revising. Actually, I had to rewrite my book because I learned so much since I wrote it. I'm sure you've had the same experience with your books. But another one I like is that if you say, Fred, what do you do? I say, well, George, thanks for asking. I'm going to answer your question by asking you one. Have you ever been to an event and you're watching and listening to the speaker and you're thinking to yourself, boy, that guy's good. I mean, he is really good. He's articulate, authentic, very entertaining. Obviously, the guy has a passion for what he's doing. Man, I wish I could do that. I'm the guy they hire to develop, practice, and deliver presentations like that. And then I'll ask a little prospecting question. I'll say, you probably don't know anyone who needs to improve their public speaking and presentation skills, do you? And we're either gonna make an appointment in the future or we're finished. And that's a good part of an elevator speech too. We don't talk about enough is disqualifying. Everyone's not a prospect. Why waste major time on minor possibilities? You want to disqualify those people. You're not going to buy everything offered to you, right? No.
Now, that's an interesting piece of advice. So instead of trying to make everyone our friend, we simply need to clarify what our positioning is, what our value is, and discover if there's interest there. And if there's not, well, nice to meet you. Perhaps we'll chat again, but I'm going to talk to someone else.
You're right. And the phrase hire me, and there's a story behind that, because most people say, well, I work with companies. I help people. Well, God bless you if you're independently wealthy. Come on in. But hire me says, you know what? I'm really good at this. I'm proud of it. And you know what else? There's some jack connected to it. And if that disqualifies people, that's great. That's fantastic. Now, some people don't like the word hire me. I was once doing a seminar and a lady says, it sounds to me like you got a little attitude with that hire me, Fred. I said, well, what do you want to do? Work with a wimp? Somebody's not proud of what they do? But yeah, but if you're not comfortable with it, don't say it, because that'll come across. Use words like people write me checks. People put me on their payroll. People give me a project. Here's one I really like. And I got this from a real estate lady. She said, people buying and selling homes choose me. If you think about it, I know Southwest Airlines, whenever they land, that pilot says, we know you had many choices when you fly. Thank you for choosing Southwest. But I think you're just putting a little jack behind it and saying with an attitude, yeah, let's not waste time. I'm not going to buy everything from that's offered to me. I don't expect you to. Don't take it personally.
Fred, on the topic of the elevator speech, when someone comes to you and say, Fred, I'm going to hire you to help me fix my elevator speech, what might be the first one or two questions that you ask them to see, one, if you can help them, and two, to actually get them better focused?
Oh, I'd say, well, first of all, tell me a little bit about what you do. What's your product or service? Who is your audience? Who are your prospects? And some people don't know those things. They'll go on and on, like you said, well, you know, I'll do the gutters for you, and I'll rake your yard, and is there anything else you pay people to do? I can do that. No. It's got to be the bullseye. I mean, I'll give you an example. I know a guy who's an attorney, and he got up and he's giving his elevator speech. He says, I'm an attorney. He says, I do contracts. Buy-sell agreements, leases, rentals, I do contracts. And during the Q&A, somebody would say, you know, a friend of mine has a speeding ticket. Do you? I do contracts. Or somebody said, well, I know somebody might be getting a divorce. I do contracts. Now, he may do some of these other things. I'm sure, George, you do a lot of other things that are not in your initial elevator speech. We were just talking about mind mapping. But you don't mention those till you've done some business with them and gained their trust. And then you can lead into that. But to your point that you made earlier, you don't name a lot of stuff because then your intended message is intended to mean what you don't want it to mean. And they'll think, well, he's a jack of all trades and a master of none. So I think that, yeah, that's important.
Now, I'm curious. Here's a word that I believe people wrongly use when they describe who they work with or what they do. They use the word everyone or everybody.
Exactly. No, you know, no pain, no sale. You know, you got to find that pain. And a lot of the individual coaching I do, somebody will call up and say, you know, I'm sick and tired of people who don't work as hard as I do. They're not contributing as much to the company, but they're getting recognition, bonuses. Sometimes they're getting promoted because they're speaking. And they're terrible, but they're doing it and I'm not. Can you help me? And that person, you know, wants to know. But then we got to ask some questions still. And one of those questions, hire me, you know, do you have the jack for it? Are you motivated? And at a certain point, that's the pain. They realize they're working more, they're contributing more than other people, but they want to get recognized. They want to get more money. They want to get promoted. And so much of it's communication to your world, too.
And Fred, those people, when they come to you and they say, well, you know, my colleagues don't work as hard as me, don't know this as well as me. However, there are a couple of them who they get better recognition, they get the better opportunities just because they seem to speak up more often. Those people who come to you for help, why aren't they speaking up?
Well, some of them, not enough pain. It's got to come to enough pain. You know, maybe the wife says, why aren't you making more money? Maybe they realize it themselves, or maybe some of their colleagues are saying, hey, Bobby, he just took your idea. You came up with that. And I think it's that pain of not getting recognized, personal recognition. It's not all about money, but it's being able to better yourself. And so many times it's communication. I think big companies, when they have the funds for it, even smaller companies, they're teaching their people communication skills. You know, there's a local college does a survey every year. And what companies are saying is that new hires are lacking communication skills. You could be great at HVAC, you could be a great mechanic, accountant, whatever, but if you can't communicate with your fellow employees, with underlings, overlings, prospects, clients, it's going to hurt you. There's some people you just got to keep them in the shop because they're terrible communicators. They're good at what they do, but they're not going to advance their career.
Don't let them near clients or customers. Just keep them in that back room, just coding whatever it is they do back there.
Yeah, sounds like you've had some people like that, or you know people like that. Yeah.
And Fred, why do you think, are those people simply shy? Is that their issue?
I think that's part of it. Fear of public speaking. You know, that's most people's greatest fear. And to your world too, people say, well, why do people have the fear of public speaking? I say, well, why not? Most of our communication is one-on-one. A lot of it's on the phone. You don't see or hear the person. It stands to reason. You get in front of a group, it's like, whoa, you're out of your comfort zone. And then the other reason they have the fear of public speaking, some people don't know what they're talking about. They'll get up and give a presentation. They don't know anything about it. And they'll start repeating things and get off topic. So you have to know the formula for public speaking. And then I think you have to practice. You know, we've got the Olympics coming up this month. Does anybody think any of those Olympians show up just like, well, I think I'll go throw that javelin today, or maybe I'll go run this race? You know, no, these people have practiced for years. Why would you think you can get them to give a presentation and not practice? You know, I coach TED Talk speakers, and our rule of thumb is 1 hour of preparation for every minute of presentation. What's been your experience with practicing?
1 hour of prep for every minute. Now that seems extreme, and I haven't noticed, you know, it depends. It depends on how familiar they are with the information.
Good point.
However, the scale is worth noting. I think it's worth, the point I think for people is that if you've got a 30 minute presentation, you can't rehearse it in 30 minutes. you probably got to spend hours over a period of weeks, ideally, because you can't simply start rehearsing the day before, and because your body and your brain needs to work in spurts. It's the same way. In fact, it's funny that you mentioned this. I was thinking of this earlier, Fred. I've run a few marathons. And I'll tell you, I don't do that anymore because I don't want that much pain. But in preparing for a marathon, you need to train over months. And you start out just first time, you just get out and you walk out the door, you walk to the sidewalk and you walk back. And that's the first day, it's a success. Next day, you walk a little bit further. And then weeks later, you're actually running a mile or two with maybe some breaks. But the key is that you need to space it over time. That's what I think makes the big difference with any skill, especially speaking.
That's a good point. What's your best tip for practicing? Best practice tip?
The best. Now, here's something that surprises people. They think that the only way to rehearse a presentation. So let's say you've got let's go with a 30-minute presentation. They think that you simply start and then run 30 minutes. And then again, later you start and run 30 minutes. And my advice is to rehearse in modules. Hmm. Pick out your opening, work on that a few times until you get more comfortable with it. Then pick out your closing and work on that a few times. And then pick out key parts in the presentation, because not every part is as critical, and you want to be stronger on the critical parts, and it's okay to go a little bit weaker on the fluff or the transitions. And then maybe you run it all the way through, but rehearse it in pieces makes it easier to remember.
All right, good point. And I like your point of practicing modules. And one of the things that we always tell people, practice the sticky spots, because you always avoid those. I mean, I got my opening. I mean, that's solid. My closing, I crush it. But there's a couple of things in there, and I keep avoiding them because either the verbiage is wrong or the concept's wrong. Either fix it or change it, because if you don't, it's going to be in the back of your mind, and it'll make you screw up your presentation. Well, here's the tip I got from Mark Brown. Mark Brown was a Toastmaster, won the international contest, I don't know how many years ago. He said, take a video of yourself, sound and video. First time you go back to that video, turn the sound off. Just watch yourself. Are you doing anything that's distracting the people? Because nonverbal communication trumps verbal. Second time, turn it around. Don't look at it, but listen. Do you have any ahs or ers, filler words? How is your enunciation and pronunciation? How is your cadence? How is your inflection? How are your pauses? Third time, watch the video, sound and video. You'll see and hear what the audience sees and hears. Fourth time, do it with a coach. Because we all have blind spots. You might miss something that you're really good at or really need improvement. But that is a great tip. Now, let me get another one before we, while we're on the subject. The closing comes after Q&A. Too many people, well, you know this, sure, because you're a pro. Too many people have questions after they've closed their presentation. And this gets to the law of primacy and recency. The audience best remembers the first and last things you say and do. That's why I want a strong opening and a stronger closing, because the last thing I say and do is the first thing the audience remembers. An example I always like to give, you do the traditional way, I finish my speech, great closing, you come up, Fred, that was great, can you take a few questions? And I'm taking the questions, I got time for one more, and Bobby raises his hand. And Bobby says, hey Fred, you know the thing you said about practicing in your mind's eye? What a bunch of junk. Wasted my morning. Well, everybody gets up to leave. Well, bunch of junk, wasted my morning. But traditionally, people don't do it that way. They always take the question, oh, you got to have your closing last.
Makes sense. Yeah, too many people end with, no more questions? Okay, that's all.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Now, to that point, even going beyond that, you want to have an afterduction. Always write your own introduction. Because if you don't write it, they're going to grab something off the internet. And, George went to this school, and he's got this number of kids, and he likes to do this. It has nothing to do with your presentation. But the afterduction can be pretty cool, too. And the host reads it and says, hey, that was dynamite. We really appreciate you being here. Hey, I talked George into staying for an extra half hour. He's got some of his books here. I think he's even got a special on that seminar coming up. I'll bet you if you're really nice to him, he'll autograph the book and take a picture with you. And if that third party says it, it's just like having the third party give you a great introduction. It's huge. And too many people miss both of those parts. The introduction is an integral part of the presentation.
Fred, during the pandemic, our need to communicate has probably escalated. We need to communicate more and more clearly. What challenges have you noticed people are facing communicating during this pandemic, and how have you been helping them?
Well, right here, we're on Zoom. And I'll tell you the story. We were in South Africa when this thing broke out, and we got back to St. Louis. I was bummed out. Didn't do anything for about a month. I started getting on Zoom meetings. Oh, I've looked up more noses than an ear, nose, throat doctor. I've seen backgrounds that people should be criminalized for having, even, you know, people in the medical industry, HIPAA would shut them down. People have no idea where I look like a Martian now. The lights are terrible, microphones, and it just gave me a whole lot to write about. And because it was done so poorly, but I think it's going to be here to stay. You and I have talked about a new application called which changes everything. Because why travel if you can give a great presentation? You just have to do it correctly. Have everyone turn off their cameras so there's no distractions. You know, this is an important point worth making. We can't multitask. Everyone thinks they can. Women think they can do it better than men. Nobody can multitask. And the example I love to give, if you're watching any cable news show, that little ticker tape comes across the bottom of the screen. If you're reading that ticker tape, you have no idea what they're talking about. And to prove it, when the commercial comes on, the ticker tape is gone because the advertiser would never pay for that. So if you've got all these screens up and what's George wearing and what's on Mary's wall, you're not even watching the speaker or listening to them. And there's lots of little bitty things that make a huge difference. You find that, don't you?
Definitely. The Zoom presentations, this whole virtual environment provides the opportunity for a lot more distractions.
Yeah.
It's curious, in a recent in a presentation that I delivered to a group of executives recently, I did a quick poll. One of the neat things about Zoom is the polling feature.
Yes.
The question I asked was, how many other applications do you have open on your computer right now? And more than half of the people had at least five applications open.
Oh. Yeah, no, we can't multitask, and you've got to control it, and it's tough. And you have to have a lot of different things to get their attention. And I think that's where changing backgrounds, having sound, having videos in your presentation. This certainly has to do with in-person presentations too, but even more so on Zoom, where people can just go blank and go play games somewhere and come back. But it's huge. And like you said, modules, you build your presentation in modules. That's how you customize them for different groups. And videoing those presentations, and perhaps in the future, presenting those as really nice videos, but stopping them for the Q&A and some banter about the presentation or the topic, that's going to change everything for the better.
Now, I'm curious, in a live presentation, when you're in the room or on the stage, you probably know to look after the setting. How does it look? You want to have the lights right. You want to avoid. But yet, when people seem to get into the virtual world, they either totally forget about that, or perhaps they never knew it to begin with. But how other things going on, the poor lighting, the poor sound, the distractions, and some people, and some people, Fred, probably think that, you know, this whole Zoom thing, it'll be over soon. The pandemics, we almost beat it. We're never going to use it. I don't have to get good at this. What do you say to those people?
I say I like wearing my shorts like I am now. and I'm barefoot, and you don't see it. I have no idea what you're wearing, if anything. But it's a lot easier than getting on a plane and going somewhere. And if this is going to be video, like streaming, people are going to be able to watch it on their time, how they want to watch it, when they want to watch it, rewind, stop it. There'll be a speed through it. You're going to be able to watch it at a quicker speed. It's going to change everything. I mean, I think it certainly will have the in-person events, but I think this is going to make for a lot better communication for many, many people. Now, one of the things, I just thought it's like, you know, you're going through, you made a couple of good points. Well, I can rewind that, make sure I understood it. Yeah.
Now, let's bring back a point you mentioned earlier, Fred, about people in the workplace who are getting passed over for opportunities because of their poor presentation, poor communication skills. Now they have an additional challenge to communicate virtually. And again, it's the ones who get onto this environment and learn how to do it well. And well just means better than most others. It doesn't mean perfectly, does it?
No. And in fact, you don't want to be too perfect, because it's not real. We all make mistakes. No, you want to be natural. It's like neither of us have a script right now. This is a conversation. And we both stumbled a little bit, mispronounced something, gone back, forgotten something, come up. But that's the way the world is. And you can do that. And it's just a matter of The more you do it, the better you get. My best practicing tip is speak, speak, speak. You can think about it. You can practice the video thing. You can read books, watch other people speak, go to seminars. But the bottom line is you got to speak. The learning is in the doing. But let me mention this, and you know this. We talked briefly about it yesterday. You can take it a step further if you teach it. When you go to medical school, especially the surgeons, they're told, see one, do one, teach one. And I asked my son-in-law, who's a doctor, he said, oh yeah, yeah, if I can perform that procedure from another room, instructing the man who's in the operating room, I've mastered it. Personal story, I started a meetup. I taught a class at a community college. I never had any education courses. I was way out of my comfort zone doing that, but I've learned a ton. Because as you know, when we get out of our comfort zone, we make it larger. Has that been your experience too?
Yeah, very much. In fact, way back in the beginning, when I was just starting into this type of business, one of my first assignments was subbing for friends. They were going away on a vacation, and they said, "Well, why don't George, you know, public speaking? Can you teach this 14-week course for us?" And I thought, are you kidding me? And then I thought, well, okay, I guess I'll either learn how to do it or no, this isn't for me. And each week I prepared the lesson, you know, the few days before, and delivered it the following evening. And I learned a lot from that, made mistakes along the way. But guess what? The students didn't know, because I knew more than they did.
Oh, exactly. And mistakes are a good thing. Bill Gates said, if you get it right the first time, you don't give it a second thought. You know, at first it's tough. Like, oh man, I was putting a desk the other day. I had to do it twice, if you know what I mean. But hopefully if I had to do it again, I could do it quicker. I put something on backwards, had to take the thing apart, you know, but you get ticked off. But then all of a sudden you think about what went wrong, what are the options, and you learn something. If you get right the first time, in my case, it would have been dumb luck if I'd gotten that put together the first time yesterday. But that's how we learn stuff, and I think we have to embrace that. And to your point, if you don't tell anybody, nobody knows. That's one of the beauties. That's one of the beauties of being a speaker. You know, if we were in the Olympics, you know, they're holding up those 10 cards. You don't have to be perfect doing this. You know, if we're in a play and I forget my lines, I'm screwed. Or if we're in a marching band and everybody's coming this way and I'm going that way, I'm screwed. But you have no idea, as an audience, what I've left in, what I've added this time. You've had that experience, right?
Yes, there's many times, Fred, that after I walked away from a presentation, I thought, I forgot to tell them about.
Yeah.
But they don't know, and it doesn't matter.
No. And then even if you do forget and you say, oh, I'm sorry, I got to go back to this. It's how you do it. Some people panic. Oh, my gosh, I forgot to. I said, God, I just remembered, this is an important point. I should have mentioned it earlier. Nobody crucifies you. You know, I always ask people, you know, this fear of public speaking. So is anybody sitting out there thinking, I can't wait till Fred screws up. I'll be on his Facebook page. He'll never show up in this town again. No, they're all glad you're up there and not them. And if you mess up, they feel for you. And they don't want you to be too good. You humanize yourself with those mistakes.
Fred, I think I'm glad you point out that distinction, that there's a difference between being natural and being perfect. And the goal isn't perfect. The goal is to be yourself, but be your best self because of the preparation and the rehearsal that you did.
Yes. And so much of it, to your point, it's confidence in your competence. It's like, I got this. I know what I'm doing. I don't know it all, but I'm confident enough. Throw me anything you want. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and you're always learning. You make that point. Yeah, I've learned a lot from people in the audience. I remember one time, when it came down to the Q&A, I said, do you have any questions? And I didn't get many people raising their hand. Well, this guy came up and he said, can I give you a suggestion? I said, well, sure, please. He said, instead of saying, do you have any questions, which is a yes or no answer, why don't you say, what questions do you have for me? Better than that, I was talking to a professor. He said, well, take it a step further. You know, say, this is the time I had set aside for questions. What questions do you have for me? I'm going to ask the first question. Because one of the questions I'm always asked is, And then you've primed the pump. So you get a lot from your, I'm sure you've learned from your audience, haven't you?
You bet, yes. And many of the learnings came from making mistakes along the way. And funny you mention that one time, I remember that I allow myself to remember. I told the audience at the front what I was going to cover, and then I'm getting close to the end, and someone says, "Well, you said you were going to cover this." I did a pause just like that. And I remembered something that one of my mentors said to me. And so this is a line that I used. And it was this: "You know, I'm glad you noticed that. I leave that to the end because it's very important."
That's great. That's great.
And the audience doesn't need to know that it wasn't the sequence. It didn't go exactly the way you planned. Yeah. As long as you get your message across and you get them thinking or doing what you want them to think or do.
Well, here's another lesson I learned from the audience. It was Q&A, somebody asked a question. I said, "Gee, I'm sorry, I don't know. Does anyone have an answer?" And somebody raised their hand and answered the question. Well, afterwards, a friend of mine who's a speaker, Chris Robinson, was there. He's a John Maxwell guy. And he comes up to me and I said, "Oh, Chris, good to see you." He says, "Yeah, good presentation, but can I give you a suggestion?" I said, "Well, absolutely." He said, "You shouldn't have thrown that question out to the audience." I said, "Why not? It sounded like a good answer." He said, "How do you know it was the right one?" What if someone had challenged her? When you threw it out to the audience, you lost control. And he was right. So what I do now, I say, I'm drawing a blank. If I don't come up with an answer before the end of the presentation, grab me afterwards. We'll figure it out. But what a great lesson to learn. Yeah, you got to be. I mean, I was doing it wrong for a long time.
I don't know. I object to the word wrong. I think that we have choices, and some of the choices are more effective depending on the situation. If you were, for example, speaking to a group of I don't know, medical professionals, and the question sort of leaned on the medical profession, something you're not able to answer, then in a case like that, you would make sense to go to the group saying, "You know, that's not my specialty, but I know some of you are, you know," so there's a time. So, I think that's probably a challenge that some people have. They think that there is a right way and a wrong way, and there's just some ways that work better, and nothing works perfect all the time. And sometimes you do something the wrong way and it works and people love it. Sometimes. and maybe because, you know, they made the same mistake and they love it when you do it.
That's a good point. Yeah. There's different ways of doing everything. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think if it's a simple answer, that might be better than, especially something I wouldn't have known about. And I can't remember that point, but time was limited. And it is a good point when you throw it out to the audience. If you've got a time schedule, that could have messed up everything. Because how many times you've been to a presentation and the speaker says, "Oh my gosh, got 5 minutes left and I've got 15 slides. Hold on." Yeah. Well, time management, that's a tough one. I have a tough time with that one sometimes.
Fred, with technology's now playing a bigger part in how we communicate, certainly like Zoom, for example, and did you face a steep learning curve with the technology, or did you just suddenly just grasp it like that and said, "I got this"?
I'm still working on it. No, well, wait a minute. You know that you attended one of my seminars and left it because I completely screwed it up. Yeah, I have a good friend was on it and he said, "Would you like to talk?" I said, "No." I didn't have the microphone set up. I didn't have the audio coming through as it should have. And this does not come by me naturally. My wife's a teacher. We are all, at our age, immigrants to this. Young people, they were born into it. You know, I've got a 4-year-old grandson can do a lot of this stuff. It's unbelievable. Yeah, no, you learn by mistakes. It's not natural, but I love doing it. I think as you do too. I mean, this is pretty cool. You got a great setup there. I keep working on this thing. I'm working on different cameras and, you know, I wish I got this technology right the first time. It could have saved me a lot of time and money, but that's okay. All you can do is go forward.
I imagine there aren't days when you sweat during your presentations anymore, But there still are a lot of people out there who do sweat. And if you were able to give them one, two, or three tips that they could take away so at least they sweat less, what would those one, two, or three tips be?
I think the first one, talk about your passion. If you can do that opportunity. Passion trumps everything. In fact, I watched the video once. It was in Canada. It might have been Toronto. The city council, 2 a.m, they were going to close the library. Maybe this was another city. But anyway, there was a young gal there, a student, and she was going to testify. And she says, I hate public speaking. She starts crying and sweating and talking about the library is the only place I can get the internet. And if you close it, I won't be able to do my studies. She got a standing ovation. It was a terrible presentation, but her passion, it trumped everything. So if you take passion plus knowledge plus technique, you will own the audience. So if you're able to talk about your passion, practice, 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 and then speak, speak, speak. The more you do it, the better you get at it. The same thing using this technology, everything. You find that, don't you, George?
Very much so. Yeah, this is a learning experience. And yes, and I have the pain of some painful mistakes in making it work, that's for sure.
I know, and you can't edit all of them out, but you know, you want to get that intended message out. And you know, sometimes editing, maybe voiceovers after that or something. But yeah, it's luckily we have a passion for what we're doing. A lot of people don't have that option. They've got a J-O-B. And that's what they got to speak about, and you got to learn it. So you have to know what you're talking about, too.
My guest today is Fred Miller, reminding you to tap your passion and practice the sticky parts.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.